Hello, and welcome back for another affiliate-focused branch of the UF Care Podcast, conversations with early career professionals studying addiction research here at the University of Florida, as well as providing advice and support for those entering the field. My name is Victor. I'm a third-year graduate student here in the Department of Clinical Health Psychology, working with Dr. Jeff Boisneau, and today we're joined by Sabrina Zikeda. Sabrina is a first-year pre-doctoral fellow here at the University of Florida in the Department of Neuroscience under the mentorship of Dr. Bizon and Dr. Sedlow. She is one of the famed triple gators, as we were talking about beforehand.
Yes, yes, I am. I've stayed here for almost every degree that I've gotten thus far, so I must really, really like it.
I think that's the coolest thing. I'd barely heard of a double gator, much less a triple gator.
It really wasn't intentional. It's just UF is a great institution. And every time I wanted to advance my career, UF had wonderful options. And so it made it very difficult to leave.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Sabrina, for joining us today. Really appreciate you taking time out of your research. I know you were just working with the rats a little bit earlier.
Yes.
So just to review, what we're going to talk about today is a little bit about your career, how you came to be at UF for your triple gator status. We'll talk about your work in grad school and then what your plans are for the future. And of course, as always, we will end with a chance for you to offer advice for other people interested in doing the kind of work that you are doing. Any questions before we get started?
No, I think we can get started.
All right. Fantastic. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your research?
Yeah. So my work in grad school has mostly been focused on understanding how cannabis impacts cognition, specifically in older adults. And we do this using a rodent model of aging. And that's because in recent years, we're starting to see that older adults are actually one of the most rapidly growing demographics of cannabis consumers, which is always interesting to people because I think when they picture what a typical cannabis user looks like, they're thinking more of like a young adult or someone in college, and they don't really think about older individuals using it for medicinal or recreational purposes.
Mm-hmm. So there are more older people and more of them are using marijuana.
Yes.
So what is it about the rodent model that lets us learn about how older people use marijuana?
So we're really, really lucky in that older rodents, or I shouldn't say older, aged rodents, show a lot of the cognitive deficits that we see in older adults. So they show deficits on tasks that use both the hippocampus and the prefrontal cortex. And these are two regions that are susceptible to age-related decline. And so that gives us the ability to test them following cannabis exposure and see how they're impacted by its effects.
What sort of tests do you do with the rats?
So we have a lot of different tasks. A lot of the work I actually did in undergrad and was lucky enough to keep doing in grad school was using touchscreen operant chambers. And so for these, you know, one side has like an iPad-like display in which we're able, you know, to display images or stimuli. And so that gives us a lot of flexibility to design tasks. And two of the tasks that I've been using right now are the delayed response task and the trial unique non-matching to location task or tunnel task. The delayed response task is dependent on the PFC or the prefrontal cortex, and the tunnel task is dependent on the hippocampus. Would you like me to kind of walk you through what it looks like on one of those tasks?
Absolutely. So just for folks who are less familiar with the brain, the hippocampus and the PFC, the prefrontal cortex, they are areas of the brain that kind of control different aspects of cognition.
Yes. So the prefrontal cortex is more so used for things, executive functions such as working memory. And working memory is your ability to kind of hold on to pieces of information for a short duration of time to solve a task. An example of something that would be like using your working memory or an easy way to think about it is like a matching card game. And so you see a stimuli or you see, you know, a picture of something, and then you kind of have to hold on to that information for a short duration until it's your turn to make a selection again. So it's like, you got to just hold it for a little while so you can make a choice.
Right. Working memory. Yeah. And then the hippocampus.
That's more so for spatial memory. So the location of something, where it is.
In space. Okay. So how do these two tasks interface with the PFC and the hippocampus specifically? Well, you mentioned the delayed response task.
So the way the delayed response task is kind of designed, the rats will have a sample phase, a choice phase, and a delay phase. During the sample phase, they're shown a stimuli. Then a delay phase begins. It's anywhere between 0 to 24 seconds. After the delay has elapsed, then they're presented with two stimuli and they hopefully select the one that was previously shown during that sample phase. Now, when you give this task to aged and young rats, we find that they are not impaired on the 0 second delay, either young or aged. But when you start getting into the longer delays of the task, although both groups perform worse, the aged rats are more impaired on the longer delays compared to the young. And so it's the delay portion of the task that's engaging the PFC.
The older rats have a hard time remembering which stimulus or which, you know, button they pressed to get the reward.
Yes.
Okay.
The longer you ask them to remember where that thing was, the more difficult it is for them to do.
I see. And that is using the prefrontal cortex.
Yes.
Okay. What's the task for the hippocampus?
So the hippocampal task is, the way this one's designed is that you have a stimuli illuminated on the screen. So a sample phase, the rat will select it and then have to turn around and nose poke the feeder. And that prompts the presentation of two stimuli on the screen for a choice phase. Now, for this task, they hopefully select the one that was not previously shown during that sample phase. But with the main variable here being the degrees of separation in which the two stimuli are presented during the choice phase. And the idea here is that the closer two things are together, the harder they are to distinguish spatially. And so that involves the hippocampus.
Okay. Yeah. That visuospatial memory, yes. Where things are in terms of yes. location. And what do we find for older and younger rats?
So both young and aged are impaired across closer degrees of separation, because the closer they are, the harder they're to distinguish. Mm-hmm. But the aged perform lower or worse than the young across all degrees of separation. So they're just impaired across distinguishing things spatially.
Okay. And is that generally across these two tasks, older rats do a bit worse? Where does the marijuana come into this?
So the marijuana comes into this because we were interested in seeing whether or not, I mean, just from a starting point, whether it would lead to worse impairments on these cognitive tasks or whether it would be better. Like, we were just kind of interested in general, what effect it was going to have on their cognition. But with that said, there was work done by a previous grad student in our lab, Shelby Blaze, and she was looking at working memory performance in young male and female rats. And what she found was that exposure to cannabis smoke, although it had no effect on male rats' performance, it surprisingly enhanced working memory accuracy in females, which tended to perform less accurately than males under baseline conditions. And then what was really, really interesting about her work is that in addition to that, cannabis smoke enhanced working memory accuracy in a small subgroup of male rats that performed comparably to the worst performing female rats. So the idea was that it wasn't that it was just enhancing cognition for the females. It seemed to be enhancing cognition for just rats with a lower baseline performance.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, it kind of got us thinking that, you know, older adults, I shouldn't refer to the
sure, right? older adults. Our no, age, I'm yeah. still processing these results. Goodness.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. I mean, I remember when I joined the lab and was learning about this research, it was like so incredibly exciting to me because it just, I don't know, I think a lot of what we associate with how cannabis impacts cognition and memory and things like that is all very negative. So it was just shocking to see a positive improvement. And so because aged rats perform worse at baseline on these tasks, perhaps it would improve performance in the aged rats following cannabis exposure. And that's kind of the question, or what I've been doing for the last couple of years now.
Right. Wow. Do you have any results to share?
I do. So we've actually seen that on our delayed response task, it seems like acute exposure to cannabis smoke in males, so just male rats, had differential effects between our young and age, such that it had a tendency to impair accuracy in the young and actually enhance accuracy in the aged rats.
What?
Yeah. So that was really, really exciting. I remember pulling that data and starting to analyze it and being like, oh my God, like, this is so cool.
What about in female rats? Do we find the same difference?
So we actually did not see any significant difference of cannabis smoke exposure in our females. So
interesting. So what?
I will have one caveat that we are trying to increase our sample sizes. So we're finishing out this study so that we can draw firm conclusions.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to think of what the mechanism could be. Like, why, how is marijuana having this effect, and what could be going on there? That's so neat.
Yeah. So there's a couple different ideas as to why cannabis exposure might be having an effect on working memory. There's a couple different reasons why people think there's deficits or impairments in working memory. And one of the ideas kind of starts out with the fact that working memory is thought to depend critically on sustained firing of activity of PFC pyramidal neurons. And these pyramidal neurons are modulated by multiple classes of GABAergic interneurons, which have been seen as important regulators of working memory.
So something's changing in the structure of the prefrontal cortex over time. In the neurons that make it up, something's changing.
Yeah. So we see that, or one of the ideas as to why working memory might be impaired with aging is that it's been linked to enhanced PFC GABAergic transmission and reduced pyramidal neuron activity. So one of the ideas is that blockade of GABAergic signaling could enhance working memory in aged rats, kind of by preventing GABA-induced suppression of neuron activity. So within the PFC, we find that there are CB1 receptors that are enriched on GABAergic interneurons, where they act to inhibit GABA release in an activity-dependent manner. And so this kind of anatomical arrangement sort of suggests that by activating CB1 receptors on PFC GABAergic interneurons, THC could suppress GABA release, thus disinhibiting pyramidal neuron activity and facilitating working memory.
Okay. So folks who are familiar with GABA and neurotransmitters and neuronal structure, that'll be very interesting to you.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. Later down the line, you know, we're starting to get interested in sort of the mechanisms that are kind of driving these changes that we're seeing. But that'll be work that I'm doing much further down the road.
Absolutely. So let's take a step back and talk about how you got to do this research in the first place. What about the impact of cannabis on cognition using the rat model? What about that excited you? How did you get here?
So as much as I would love to take credit for having this like really cool, fantastic idea that I was like, oh my God, there's this big gap in the research. Like, we just need to know. It was not me. It was 100% my PIs. When I joined the lab, it hadn't dawned on me that I would be interested in drug research, and especially cannabis research, but they kind of explained the premise of the project to me and why we should be interested in how cannabis is impacting cognition and like this growing older adult population that was, you know, using it significantly more. And I just kind of fell in love with the research as I went. And I realized that it was so much more interesting than I could have ever imagined. And so I'm very happy that I went into it with an open mind and was just kind of like excited to learn, because I think if I had said no, I would have really, really regretted it in the long run.
Mm-hmm. So before we started recording, you were telling me a bit about your journey to become a triple gator. Can you share that with the audience, please?
Yeah. So I kind of had a little bit of an unusual path to grad school and academia. I was homeschooled a lot on and off growing up, and, you know, did a kind of mix of traditional homeschooling and unschooling and, you know, all this stuff. And it sort of culminated in, you know, me getting my GED, and I went to a local college. I went to Miami-Dade College, which was fantastic. I got my AA there and then transferred to the University of Florida, where I got my bachelor's in psychology. During my bachelor's, I started doing research in Dr. Sarah Burke's lab, and she was focused on aging and memory research. And that's where I kind of started to realize how much I really enjoyed being in a lab setting and doing research. So I stayed for a post-bac year doing work in her lab. And from there, I decided that I wanted to go to grad school. So I started the master's program, finished that, and really enjoyed my lab and thought it was a great fit for me. And so I decided to stay for a PhD.
Was your master's with the same lab in neuroscience?
It was. Jenna and Barry have a really fantastic lab setting, and it's productive, but also just very supportive. And they have been incredibly helpful every step of the way. So I was like, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
And there you go.
Yeah, it was, I really lucked out.
What is the transition from the master's side to the pre-doctoral side been for you?
So it wasn't as shocking or difficult as I thought it would be. I mean, I think part of it is the fact that the neuroscience department has been incredibly supportive and my PIs have been incredibly supportive. So the transition felt pretty seamless. I mean, I was doing a lot of the same work. I was taking a lot of the upper division coursework. So it was just kind of like a smooth continuation of what I was doing. I think I'm eligible to apply to more stuff now. So that's been a nice change.
What do you mean by more stuff?
There's just like random little things, like a travel award where they'll specifically say that it's open to PhD students. And I've emailed and been like, hey, I'm a master's student. And they'll be like, no, we're looking for PhD students, any UF awards. UF is really great about, you know, including everybody.
Sure. Well, that's fantastic. Congratulations on your journey. It sounds like you found a place that you're really happy with. How long is this program going to be for you?
Oh, that's the fun. That's the big question that everybody seems to have.
Right.
Like, hey, when are you going to be done?
No, I'm not. How long do you get to enjoy this good grad school research?
I don't know. I don't have an exact timeline as to when I'm going to be graduating. I'm guessing 3-ish years, maybe 4. Because everything's a little bit offset. Like, I'm going to be qualifying a little bit earlier just because I have that master's experience and I have, I've taken a lot of the required coursework and things like that. So I guess we'll just have to see. I mean, I think in the grand scheme of things, a year or two in either direction doesn't change a lot. So if it's more productive and will better prepare me for what I want to do in the future, I'm fine with staying a little longer.
Sure. And then I guess, because I know it's a little bit off, what would you hope to do once you're done here? You've got your PhD, and then what?
I do know that, you know, in the future, I want to have a lab. You know, maybe it's because I'm pretty early on in my training and stuff like that. I haven't fleshed out exactly what that lab would look like, what type of institution it would be at, things like that. But I do know that I want to stay in research. I want to be involved in research, and I would love to have the opportunity to open a lab and kind of direct my own research questions one day.
That's wonderful. Well, I wish you the best of luck on your journey. to find all those good details. You've got plenty of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I guess before we wrap up for today, Sabrina, is there any advice or, you know, suggestions that you would have for other folks maybe in undergrad or working on their post-bac or further back in high school? People listening to this interview who think, oh, Sabrina sounds so cool, I want to get into that kind of work. What advice would you send to them?
Honestly, and this advice is not specific to the exact type of research I'm doing, but it's been incredibly helpful to just keep an open mind. Sometimes when you encounter opportunities or certain ideas or applications, you think that, oh, that's not a good fit for me, or I might not be eligible for that or whatever. But being open to learning new things and trying new things has been one of the best choices I could have made. It's given me the opportunity to go to fellowships like I did this summer at Spines and to find a really great research topic and TA for classes and do all these things that when the idea was first presented to me, I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, should I? Is it the right? But sometimes just going with the flow and keeping an open mind is the best way to go about it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Sabrina.
Thank you for having me.
We'd also want to give a warm thanks to the University of Florida Center for Addiction Research and Education, Dr. Oliver Grundman, Dr. Sarah Jo Nixon, Dr. Joanne Paris, and all of our mentors and future collaborators. Catch you next time.